Chapter 39. Sorensen looked at the pictures again, first one and then the other, back and forth, over and over. The same tire and the same mud. She said,
"This doesn't necessarily mean anything."
"I agree," Reacher said. "Not necessarily."
"I was never here before."
"I believe you."
"And the Bureau doesn't have its own make of tires. I'm sure we just buy them like anyone else, probably from Sears. I'm sure we look for something cheap and reliable, something generic, whatever's on sale, like everyone does. So these go on all the big sedans. There must be half a dozen different makes and models. Fleet vehicles, rentals, the big things old people drive. I bet there are a million tires like this in the world."
"Probably more," Reacher said.
"So what are we saying?"
"We're saying we know for sure what kind of tires the bad guys have on their car, the same kind as yours, which means their car is probably a big domestic sedan. It's a start."
"That's all?"
"Anything else would be speculation."
"We're allowed to speculate."
"Then I would say they are urban, or at least suburban. Big sedans are rare in farm country. It's all pickup trucks and four-wheel drives out here."
"How urban?"
"From the kind of place that has taxi companies and car services and offices and maybe an airport. The local market has to be right. I'm sure you couldn't buy tires like these out here, for instance. Why would anyone keep them in stock?"
"So you're not saying there's Bureau involvement here?"
"I'm sure there isn't."
"But?"
"Nothing."
"But?"
"But I'm pretty much a black and white kind of a person, and I like things confirmed yes or no beyond a reasonable doubt."
"Then no, it's confirmed, right now, straight from the horse's mouth, for absolute sure, beyond any kind of doubt. It is completely inconceivable the Bureau was involved with this. That's the worst kind of crazy thinking."
"Okay," Reacher said. "Let's go. Tell me if you want me to drive for a bit. I know the way." Sorensen pulled a big wide U-turn of her own, and then she hit it hard and hurried north through the rain. They passed the motel doing about 60. It looked different by day. The low bulkhead lights were off and the siding looked paler. Reacher said, "I paid for two nights in there, and I spent about 30 seconds in the room." Sorensen said,
"Why did you pay?"
"I was feeling guilty about the guy's wall."
"Not your fault?"
"That was my impression at the time."
"So you shouldn't feel guilty. Not about him, anyway. I didn't like him."
"Well, I still got his key. It's in my pocket. Maybe I'll mail it back and maybe I won't."
Then they came to the first junction, and Sorensen braked late and made the left with all kinds of squealing and sliding on the slick surface. She came off the gas and got straightened out and hit it again.
"Sorry," she said.
Reacher said nothing. He was in no position to complain. They were still on the road. He would have been in a field.
"The tires are worn," she said. "I noticed on the way out here."
Reacher said nothing. She said,
"Which means the bad guy's tires are worn, too. If the pictures are identical, that is. Which is step two. We know what kind of tires they have, and we know approximately how old they are. Maybe an older car, maybe an older driver. Could be some old person around here with one of those big old cars."
"I doubt it," Reacher said. "I don't think old people really love to come out in the middle of the night to watch women burn to death. Because you realize that fire was started when they were all still there. They didn't set a fuse. It wasn't spontaneous combustion. They lit it and they all stood around and watched and waited until they were sure it was going well."
"Okay," Sorensen said. "It wasn't a local senior. It was someone from somewhere urban."
"With taxi companies and car services and offices and an airport," Reacher said. "And maybe with a metro area population around 1.5 million. That's something Alan King let slip. He said 1.5 million people live where he lives."
"That's potentially interesting. Unless it was misdirection."
"I don't think it was. I don't think they had a script. They were generally fast and smart, but it was a random question and an instant answer. No thinking time. Too fluid for a lie. Their other lies were slower and more clumsy."
"Anything else?"
"At one point, McQueen used what I felt was an odd word choice. I was skeptical about the gas station being where the highway sign said it was, and when we got there, McQueen said, 'You should have trusted me.' I think most people would have said believed instead, don't you think? You should have believed me.
What does it mean?
I'm not sure. In the service, we were taught to listen out for odd words. The Russians had language schools with perfect accents and slang and so on and so forth, and sometimes the only tells were odd words. So for a minute, I wondered if McQueen was foreign. Sorensen drove on and said nothing. She was thinking. The shirt was bought in Pakistan or possibly the Middle East. She asked,
"Did McQueen have an accent?"
Reacher answered, "None at all. Very generic American."
"Did he look foreign?"
"Not really. Caucasian, 6 feet, maybe 160, fair hair, pale blue eyes, slender, long arms and legs, kind of gangly. But when it came to pulling the gun out of his pocket and running up the path and jumping in the car, he turned out to be plenty athletic. Gymnastic, even."
"Okay," Sorensen said. "So the word choice was probably innocent."
"Except you have to look at the victim. He will have had dealings with foreigners."
"As a trade attaché? I suppose that's the point."
"Have you ever met a trade attaché?"
"No."
"Me neither," Reacher said. "But I met a few folks who claimed they were trade attachés."
"What does that mean?"
"How much help does Coca-Cola really need to sell its stuff around the world? Not very much, right? Generally speaking, American products speak for themselves. Yet every embassy has a trade attaché."
"What are you saying?"
"Have you ever seen a trade attaché's office? I've been in two. Both had courtyard windows, not street windows. Both were lined with lead and Faraday cages, and both were swept for bugs 4 times a day. I know the Coke formula is a secret, but that's ridiculous."
"Cover for something?"
"Exactly," Reacher said. "Every CIA head of station on the planet calls himself a trade attaché." Sheriff Goodman was dog-tired, and he wasn't sure it was a good idea to take Delfuenzo's daughter out of school for the day. Or for a couple of days, or a week, or a month, or whatever Special Agent Sorensen might have in mind. His attitude was the opposite. He felt work and structure and familiarity were useful crutches in stressful times. He encouraged his own people to come in as normal no matter what had happened. Bereavement, divorce, illness in the family, whatever. In his experience, routine helped people cope. Obviously, he had to go through the compassionate motions, telling people to take all the time they needed and stuff like that. But he always added that no one would think less of them if they stuck to their tasks. And most of them seemed grateful for it. Most of them worked on as usual. And they seemed to benefit in the long term. But those were grown-ups, and Delfuenzo's kid was a kid. He drove out to the short row of ranch houses slowly and reluctantly. 4 times in his career he'd been required to tell a parent a child had died. He had never had to tell a child its parent had died. Not a 10-year-old, anyway. He didn't really know how.
"Just the facts," Sorensen had said in an earlier conversation. "Don't say anything more until we know for sure."
Not very helpful. The facts were tough. "Hey, kid, guess what? Your mom burned to death in a car." There was no easy way to say it, because there was no easy way for the kid to face it. She goes to bed one night all hunky-dory, and she wakes up the next morning with a different life. Although...
"Just the facts. Don't say anything more until we know for sure."
What were the facts? What did they actually know for sure? He had seen burned bodies, house fires, barn fires. He had to get dental records or DNA for the death certificate and the insurance. A couple of days at least. Medical opinions, which had to be signed off and notarized. So as far as Delfuenzo was concerned, nobody really knew anything for sure. Not yet. Except that she was missing, apparently carjacked. And maybe a 2-stage process would be better with a 10-year-old. First, "I'm sorry, but your mom is missing." Then, a couple of days later, when they were really sure, "I'm sorry, but your mom died." Drip, drip. Maybe better than one massive blow. Or was that just cowardice on his own part? He parked in front of the neighbor's house and concluded, yes, it was cowardice on his own part, no question. But it was also the best approach, probably, with a 10-year-old kid. Kids were different.
Just the facts. Don't say anything more until we know for sure.
He got out of his car, slow and reluctant. He closed the door and stood for a second, and then he tracked around the hood and stepped over the muddy gutter and walked up the neighbor's short driveway.